This episode of Forging Flame is brought to you by Onnit, the total human optimization website. You can go to onnit.com right now and enter the code FORGINGFLAME at checkout for 10% off any of your dietary supplement purchases. You can also check out a free trial for their three primary supplement products. They've got Alpha Brain for nootropics, ShroomTech Sport for fitness and recovery, and New Mood for your mental well-being. Not only do they have a host of great supplements, but they've also got just about anything you could possibly need for your health or fitness journey. They've got resources for training, they've got certifications, and a ton of great workout equipment. Again, Forging Flame at checkout, 10% off. It's awesome. Do it.
Do it. Welcome to Forging Flame, a podcast about the creative process with two hosts that are not afraid to get down in the mud.
I was muddy just yesterday.
My name is Ryan Selleck.
And I'm Nick Hinton.
And today the podcast just features us two, and we're going to talk a lot about perfectionism.
It's been a thing, a real tangible thing throughout this process so far, and it has its distinct benefits and also its distinct drawbacks. So
absolutely,
I guess we'll get into the mud on that one, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got a lot of places we can go with this. I have a lot of experience personally with perfectionism in my own art, and I know a lot of other people really struggle with this too, just staying productive. One of my favorite quotes I got from a Tim Ferriss book. It was Tools for Titans, and it was something in the Whitney Cummings section of it, and it was perfectionism leads to procrastination, which then leads to paralysis. And that was one of those groupings of words where I saw that, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Just hit a little too close to home for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it was so right. That's exactly what it is. Like, you want this thing to be so perfect, to be like its exalted and absolute state of just amazing.
Right, an idyllic creation.
Exactly. What you're trying to match the physical world with what is in your head, this ideal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then inevitably that leads to procrastination because you are afraid of, like Joey Edwards did when he's working with his pumpkins. Joey Edwards was from podcast number 8, I believe, and he's a pumpkin carver, and he was talking about in a few instances he had some very productive and interesting results by just diving into the pumpkin, by getting in there, because that's kind of a scary thing because you can't put the pieces of the pumpkin back in there. Yeah. Once you carve into it at a certain deal, like that's as bright as it's going to get. That's your absolute white and you just got to fucking deal with it. One of the other things that comes to mind with me is my friend Jaron Kelly once advised me when I'm drawing to draw stuff in ink, you know, just do it and get comfortable with putting ink on a paper. And that to me was kind of powerful too. That it's just like, yeah, because I mean, if I have a pencil, I'm just going to be constantly erasing it, constantly refining it. And yeah, but putting ink on paper, not being afraid to do that.
Making it permanent at its outset. Consequences be damned. You can take that really in so many different directions too, like even outside of creation or art. I mean, I was just having this conversation with my wife, who tends to get a little wrapped up in expectation of outcome. And that's like, to me, for my own mental well-being, that is a fatal thing to do. I have spent a lot of time in my younger years being wrapped up in things like perfectionism or being tied too heavily to what my expectation of the outcome should be, when realistically I don't have any control. I mean, I'm a terrible artist anyway, right? But if I'm drawing something, right, if I'm trying to sketch up some sort of an image and I'm trying to draw the most perfectly straight line that I can with my pen or my pencil or whatever, if something, you know, if a spider lands on my hand while I'm drawing, or there's a minor earthquake, or, you know, an auto accident out in front of my house or something, like, that line's going to have a jump to it, more than likely. And that's nothing to do with me, my level of control, or anything else. That was an external influence that had nothing to do with me. And that's just like in life, right? You, like, any like sense of control is just an illusion. Mm-hmm. So tying yourself to the outcome is really kind of a you know, it's a flawed way of approaching a problem.
Yeah.
Because you can't control every last element of a thing. You can control your action and your intention, and that's basically it. I'm sure that's going to be something that our listeners over time will hear me harp on, like, over and over again, because, like, that's a big thing for me. Like, action and intention, that's the only thing that you truly have any legitimate control over in life, because a meteor could come crashing through your through your roof, or, you know, like a giant fish could fall out of the sky and, like, land on the hood of your car. Like, you know, who the fuck knows? Like, it could literally be anything. So it's the same thing with perfectionism, with, like, tying yourself too closely to your intended end result of the product, because I think most artists have found, at least those that we've talked to or that I've talked to, you know, just personally in life, you know, it's a process getting from A to B, whether it's like a large painting or an album. Chances are, like, what you wind up with at the end is not what you had originally envisioned, but somewhere, you know, within the realm of that. And trying to control every little piece along the way, like, that's just, it's probably going to be at best a huge time suck that doesn't really amount to, like, a significantly better product at the end of it, you know?
Energy suck too.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah.
It's paralyzing, just like the quote. It's paralyzing. You get too far down that road and you can't move anymore. You know, it's just things don't function the way that they should function. And I really like your emphasis on action and intention, because just like you said, it's two things that you have direct control over and that influence the outcome directly. Like, it's, we've got a main line to the output, to the outcome, by controlling one of these two things, and both, you know. And there's a lot that you can do with that, like what you do and with what intention. There's a lot you can accomplish with that.
Sure. I guess the problem in this case is the action, right?
Like, yeah,
we're talking about the paralyzing nature of, you know, this creative trait of perfectionism. And while, you know, you do have control over action and intention, if you hit that block, you know, you're going to feel like you have no action available to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because
exactly.
Sometimes I know for me, like, I have a huge problem with having too many options. If there are an infinite number of options and I don't have any direct or well-conceived intention behind what my action should be, then I'm kind of, you know, just kind of lost at sea there. Like, where do I go? Because it's, you know, it's too many items on the menu, you know.
Exactly.
And they all sound pretty tasty.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually tailing into one of the reasons that I wanted to do this podcast. And it's something that I kind of figured out for myself. The first step of that was actually a TED Talk that I watched a long time ago. I wish I could tell you which one it was, but it was a guy that was a musician. He was very animated, and he was saying that anybody can make music. Basically, like, we just make many, many little decisions, yes and no decisions about what's happening in the moment. So he plays to the audience a certain bit of music and then a certain other bit of music. I think he has a guitar and he's doing a, doing like different riffs, and they choose like A, B, C, and then they basically continually make decisions until the audience has effectively created a song. So that always kind of stuck in the back of my mind. And one of the ways that I've seen it manifest in my own work is when I'm working on music, especially if I'm mixing a song, if I get too far into it and I don't listen to anything else, it becomes too ingrained in my brain to where I can no longer make effective decisions about what to do with the music, how to step forward from there, because I'm not hearing the music for what it is in the objective reality. I'm hearing the carving of sound in my brain. And sometimes when it conflicts, weird things happen. I've taken mixes to the car and thought, what the fuck? Like, this sounds twice as fast as normal. And I'm not kidding. Like, it really messed with me. I thought something was really wrong with the file. And it didn't, it was weird because it just didn't even out in my car for a couple of days because I had been over listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the techniques that I have is at some point in the process, usually towards the end, when I feel pretty comfortable with it, sometimes there might be a thing or two that I really like or something that I don't like, but I can't quite put my finger on. So what I need is like another perspective. So I'll send it to my friends. Usually I send it to you.
Yeah.
I have a few other friends I send it to where I know that they're going to be honest with me and they're not going to sugarcoat anything. I can trust them and I trust their perspective on things. So I'll share it with them and I'm basically borrowing their ears. I'm going to try to listen to it from their perspective and I look for things that jump out at them because those are the things that like either I want to move towards or I want to avoid depending on the circumstance. So a good example of that is I sent one of my recent songs that I'm working on. I sent it to my friend Rachel. And she picked out a part of the song where something didn't quite hit her ear right. And she was like, yeah, there was something here. I liked what was happening before it. I liked what was happening after it. Something about it, this transition just kind of hit my ear wrong. And I listened to that whole part of the song. And I'm like, that is literally my favorite part of the song. And I was like, I appreciate your input. And that's like, it's good that I can hear it from that perspective. And I can almost see why, because it was kind of a dissonant kind of drop there. But being that I've heard it so many times and it feels so right to me, It reinforced how right it felt to me. And that's what was really important with that is I took that information, basically her input based on the first listen, I took that information and I did one of two things. I said yes or no. And I said yes. Yes to me, really. Yes, sure. Yes to my end. I doubled down on what I already have. And it reaffirmed to me that if I disagree with her, that I actually feel pretty strongly about where it's at right now. And that she didn't notice anything else. Everything else was cool. And that was valuable information as well. That was valuable input. But sometimes people will make a suggestion on something or they might notice something and it might reaffirm something that I've noticed as well. And, you know, I might agree with them. Like she might've brought something up about that part and I'd be like, you know what? Yeah, there was something really fucked up about that part. I need to figure that out. So I would focus on that and I would come up with like a solution that works.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt you, friend. I was just gonna make a point on that because it's from my perspective, right? The difference between those two things when you're getting feedback and you either take that feedback and apply it because it kind of harmonizes with something you were already feeling versus your, you know, distinct opposition to that specific bit of feedback when it's something that you enjoy so much. And that's kind of this is kind of an aside, but in my mind, that's one of the awesome things about creating art, right? Is like, you've got the ability to fuck with people, you know, and there are definitely moments where, especially in some of your music, right? Like when I'm listening to some of your stuff, there are moments where I feel myself almost being like lulled into a place and then boom, you drop some either like something discordant or something really abrasive and it like checks my ego. And it's like a very much an auditory ego check. And I think that's amazing, but that's another thing. You take the ego out of it in terms of that like feedback. You can't allow your ego to really come to play at all. But if you feel strongly to the contrary, you know, mm-hmm. about that feedback, and you know pretty comfortably that it's not like an ego move.
Yeah.
Then, you know, yeah, that's a powerful element, because it is, if it's your intention to cause like a bit of a stir of feelings yeah. in a person, then, you know, you're hitting it right on the head. That's yeah. awesome. It yeah. might not be their music necessarily, because then maybe they don't get that. Maybe they don't get that you're trying to like jostle them in some way, but mm-hmm. I feel it and I love it.
And it's important, because it's also valuable input from people that I love and respect.
Sure.
So it's something that I'm going to consider. Like, if anybody walked up on the street and was like, this part sucks, I'm like, well, you suck. Get out of my face. Like, fuck you. Like, I didn't make that for you. But if it's something someone I love and respect, it's definitely a factor. And it's a factor towards refining the song, because every decision that we make, yes or no, further refines the song a little bit. So the more of those yes or no things that I can answer one way or the other is further refining the song. It's like carving a sculpture. The first few blade cuts are going to reveal a very simple broad stroke figure. It's not going to be refined at all. Like, it's going to take a lot of little digging. I don't know shit about sculpture, but I assume it takes quite a lot to get a lot of detail out of a sculpture.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on what you're going for, yeah, really. But,
right.
But yeah, if you're trying to do something that's like life realistic, yeah, it's going to take a lot of chipping away, a lot of polishing, a lot of refining, and then mm-hmm. stripping that shit down, because you fucked something up and like chipped off an earlobe. So guess what? Your sculpture is going to be a little smaller than it was originally intended. I mean, yeah. But you know what? Bummer. Maybe it's better when it's smaller. It doesn't need to be 12 feet high.
I think, you know, in some cases they need to be 12 feet high. But yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
So start with a 30-foot block.
Yeah. Just go for it. What are you doing listening to us? That kind of leads me into my second kind of topic that I was thinking of, and it was from an old conversation with Jessica before we had her on the podcast years ago. And we were talking with a mutual friend, and they were talking about painting. And I don't know if like perfectionism came up, but she says what she likes to do sometimes to move forward is she'll fix the little things. So she'll notice that all these little things, there's something little that needs to be fixed. And sometimes we sit there and we deliberate on what action to take next, what to do next. Like, I'll listen to a song 100 times and just not know what the next step is. Like, I know it's not finished, mm-hmm. but I don't have a clear path towards making it finished. Like, I don't have it in my head enough to where I know that, like, oh, we need this and we need this. But sometimes there will at least be some little things that I can fix, even if they seem like really trite and really overly detailed and inconsequential, even mm-hmm. just those things. So long as I'm making action with intention, then I can make a decision. So I've employed that in so many ways. I'll sit in front of the computer, then I'll just find a little thing, change the little thing. Then that will lead to another little thing, change that one. And that comes straight from her. Like, that's one of the things I'm super grateful about, the time that I spent with her, like just talking about all this stuff. We spent a lot of time on her front porch, just hanging out, and just conversations went all over the place, man. Lots of ideas and lots of different ways of looking at all things creative. So,
well, and that's a really, really useful way of looking at it too. And I mean, very practically speaking, right? If we're just being super literal, if we're using the medium of painting, right, as kind of our baseline topic of discussion for right now, if you're painting something and you don't necessarily know what it is going to be, and you reach that point to where you don't know what to do next, and you apply Jessica's method of tweaking some of the elements that are already present, just like fine detailing those, until you essentially get over your block, which is like kind of the intention, right? Is like shifting your perspective, taking yourself away from the issue at hand that's causing you so much grief and refreshing that perspective. But meanwhile, what you're doing is you're literally creating a brand new version of that painting, right? Mm-hmm. By tweaking those details, you are literally creating a different version of that painting so that when it comes back to the time to address where you got stuck before, you have not only shifted your perspective by coming back to that single thing with a fresh set of eyes, but you've come back to it with a fresh painting as well. Like literally the rest of the elements have been changed, which should hopefully further inform and like more finely tune whatever that thing was that you got stuck on before. Like for me, I'm not a painter at all. I'm not a visual artist in any way. I can do some bang up work with like some Play-Doh or something, but that's about the extent of my visual abilities, but artistically.
You deal in flavor though.
Flavor and words too.
Yeah.
Well, flavor's easy though. Flavor has a lot of rules. And there's definitely a lot of untouched territory and like how you can get to some new and innovative places flavor wise. But there are some pretty thanks to chemistry, just basic science, there are some pretty hard parameters that you can work within flavor-wise. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, you know, for me, that gets way more into the artistry side of things when we're talking about like a fully completed cocktail where you've got all of these flavor elements, but then you've also got elements like texture. You've got elements like the visual appeal of the completed cocktail. You've got the added element of like a garnish at the end that creates, you know, a brand new sensory experience on the palate as you're taking that first sip, which enhances the overall flavor of the cocktail. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of artistic stuff about flavor. But for me, like I've never really experienced much blockage in that direction. For me, I've experienced the most blockage in dealing with words, because I've done the freelance writing thing for a long, long time. I've written an odd handful of poems and songs and just odd things throughout my life. And it's always with words, it's like the blockages come for the most part right at the very beginning. Like where do you, like, how do you start a novel, right? Like, what's the first word that you write? Like, how the fuck should you know that, right? Like, that's a daunting thing. And I feel like, you know, like writer's block is definitely like a big talked about thing. Like, people who aren't writers know what writer's block is. And for me, the way that I approach any sort of blockage with words is really, it's kind of the same thing that Jessica mentions, only it's right up front. And for me, it's just stream of consciousness. Like if I'm typing or if I'm writing, you know, with pen and paper, if I don't know what to do, I'm literally typing out every single word that's popping into my head as it's coming into my head. And eventually all that bullshit is gone. And I can just like, then like the path emerges. It just kind of exposes itself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And you've also effectively drawn a distinction there between your creative phase and your editing phase, which is a very difficult thing to do when you're creating something, because it's hard to turn off that inner editor.
Oh,
as you're writing it, your inner editor wants to already start chipping away at it.
Sure.
And sometimes you need that that stream of consciousness just to get things going and to have something on the page that you can then interact with, because it's outside your head. And that's a big thing too, is that these ideas, these ideals and ways of thinking about the outcome, when they get stuck in our head, they start bouncing around, and then it's just noise. Then it just there's no sense to it anymore. It's just like, fuck, I don't even know what I'm going to say. I'm going to go watch TV. This is stupid. And it's you just got to take that first step, really. And that first step for you was stream of consciousness. Yeah. But in a lot of senses, for me, it's eating the elephant. It's just taking one bite at a time, one little thing at a time. And it's just one little action, because one action that you do actually makes an effect. The world does not give a fuck about what's in your brain. Like, doesn't matter. Anything going on in your head is just your experience of the world. And while it is absolutely valid, it's not going to make an album. It's not going to write a blog post. It's not going to make a carving. It's not going to do shit. It's just going to bounce around in your head until you fucking do something. And I'm kind of talking to myself as much as I'm talking to anybody else. So keep that in mind. This is very critical of me.
Oh yeah.
But it's a messy process sometimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's difficult.
You are right though. Like the universe, the world, whatever, does not give a fuck about what's in your brain. But what it does seem to give a fuck about is momentum.
Yeah.
It seems the universe seems to reward those who generate momentum, aligning action and intention and pushing the ball up the hill. Like it doesn't even really matter what that is. As long as you're trying and you're actually generating some mechanical motion of some sort, putting the ink on the page, putting the paint on the canvas. It doesn't matter if that serves the end result, because it is serving the end result by getting you to do the thing. Mm-hmm. I like what you said about the quote that you got from the Tim Ferriss book. And I don't know where I got this, but I've always had this rattling around stuck in the back of my head ever since I read it. But the cobwebs of inactivity eventually become chains, meaning that every moment you're not doing something, you're essentially mummified by what initially is just wispy and strand-like and able to be sloughed off pretty easily. But the longer you remain inactive, the heavier that leaden ball sits on your chest, like the thicker that wall gets through that you have to bust, or the wall gets that you have to bust through. So dabbing some paint, strumming out a few scales or something, like writing down the stream of consciousness, or, you know, just getting back to, you know, playing through your chorus riff or solo that you already feel pretty satisfied with. I mean, whatever that thing is, like generating that momentum is a pretty powerfully magical act, I think.
For sure. It's like the universe is like, oh, you're doing this? Well, let me help you. Oh, you're sitting still? Oh, cool. Let me help you. Oh, your knee's kind of sore and you kind of injured it? Okay, well, let me help you never move that thing again if you're just going to sit there and never be active again afterwards.
Yeah.
But one of the things I remembered from another one of my previous conversations with Jessica. And by the way, we're talking about Jessica Heckel, and she was our guest on episode number 5. Okay. Definitely check that out. But one of the things she said about how she thinks about her art is sometimes she starts questioning herself and starts questioning, like, well, is this even good? You know, that's a very constant question that I have. But she kind of reframed that a little bit, and she said, okay, is this better than nothing? And that to me was pretty powerful. It's like, well, shit, everything I do is better than nothing. Fuck yeah. Like, let's do it. Ink on the page. Fucking cool. That wasn't there before. Fuck yeah. That's me.
But it's also pretty powerful to understand that sometimes, like, your thing is not better than nothing. Sometimes nothing is better than, like, the thing that you did. And, like, understanding that, I think, is a very positive thing.
Yeah.
Like, no. This should never enter the world. Yes. I wish more people had that filter.
Just stop, please.
But yeah, I mean, still create, just maybe don't share it.
Yeah, just keep it to yourself. Definitely create as much as you can.
Yeah.
As much as you can, because life is short. And we can always make it better. But we were touching on there for a while on kind of manufacturing the process a little bit. Mm. By making those decisions, by picking out little things and changing them, or getting some information and considering it, yeah or no. Another one of the ways that I do that is when I'm EQing something on sound. So for those who don't know, EQ deals with the frequency of the sound. So I can boost the high frequencies and give a more sharp kind of tinny sound, or I can boost the low frequencies and get some more bass going on. But sometimes it's clear that there's something wrong, but I can't tell exactly what it is. Like, I know it's right around here, but I don't know. So what I'll do is I'll take that particular band and I'll move it to where I know it's wrong. I'm just like, okay, that's way off for sure. And then I go the other direction all the way until it's way off. And I'm like, okay, definitely way off over here. So it's somewhere in between here. So now I have new information. So I go back up and I try to make it, you know, to where I know it's wrong, but below the previous line. And then eventually going back and forth, oscillating, I kind of find a sweet spot or a spot that's at least good enough. And then I move on. But that's another way that we can make decisions about what we're doing, is having a good sense of what wrong is, because sometimes right isn't abundantly clear, especially while we're making those first steps.
And right can also be a spectrum.
Yeah.
I mean, there is an absolute range. I mean, if you just want to look at this in kind of a fractal way, right? Peel off the layer of like creating art that we're talking about and just look at it. I mean, like molecularly, right? Like nothing is ever truly touching. Mm-hmm. So like the two ends of right don't even necessarily have to be touching. They don't exist on a singular point, right? Like even if it takes an electron microscope to see where right is, you're probably going to see that right exists between 0.005 and 1.7, you know? Like, I mean, yeah. Again,
it's arbitrary.
Tying expectation to outcome is an erroneous act.
For sure.
Being comfortable, it's just going with the flow, man. That's really what we're talking about. Just accepting what is for what it is and doing what you can to influence things the direction you would prefer them to go.
Yeah. And you made a good point that, like, you didn't say it like this, but I mean, right is completely arbitrary. It's a spectrum. There is no right answer. There's no correct way of doing this. Like, there are parameters, like you mentioned with the drinks. You know, there are definite things that work and don't work. But to me, that's also just another bit of information. It's just like, okay, well, here's the rules. It's good to know the rules so that when you break them, you know you're breaking a rule. You know that, like, okay, I know this is a rule and I'm definitely considering that, but dude, try this shit right here. You know, this is amazing. But it's completely arbitrary. There's no right. There's no wrong. It doesn't matter. We're all going to die.
There's so much comfort in that notion.
There is. That's why I have a big skull on my forearm, is memento mori. We're going to die, so do the best you can. And you're making action with good intention. There, and that momentum, just like you said, it's the universe is going to get behind you. It's going to pave a way for you. Things are going to become more clear. For me anyway, a recent experience with that was when I decided that instead of going the expected route of me and getting a full-time job and being a good boy and paying off my student loans, I decided instead that I'm going to prioritize my creative pursuits, because those have always been pushed into the margins. And then inevitably I get burned out because I just have way too much shit going on. So I made that decision, and that was a hard decision. Like, we had a lot of conversations about that, some tarot readings, a lot of contemplation. Nick is very, very patient. but eventually it came down to that decision. Like, do I want to go full-time employee, be a part of the system, clock in, clock out? That has a very predictable starting point, middle point, and end point, but the chaos is still there. Anything can happen. I can get laid off. That's happened before. But then the other option was prioritizing the creative pursuits and forcing the monetary needs into like a secondary. So instead of doing 40 hours a week specifically and only for money, no other good reason, I would definitely not do that if I didn't have to, versus working 20 hours a week on creative pursuits and then 20 hours a week on whatever I need to do to make money. So once I made that decision, like, I really fucking made it. And it's a scary decision. I'm still terrified of it to this day, you know, but I also feel like it's the right decision because things started opening up. I started seeing opportunities in front of me that I would have never paid attention to before because I would be locked in this mindset of I'm going in this direction. So thinking about this doesn't serve this over here. So I'm just going to discard it. But putting myself in that mindset gave me that momentum and revealed things to me. And that's probably a big reason why this podcast is going right now, because this is not necessarily something I've always wanted to do, mm-hmm. but it's something that I know that I could do and that we could do and make and do a damn good job, I think.
Yeah. I mean, so far, the response has been pretty positive. Yeah, I've not heard anyone who's had any negative feedback. So
no. And, you know, I honestly wouldn't care if people did. And, dude, people come up to me all the time and they're like, oh, man, you know, I'll listen to it. I meant to listen to it and this stuff. I'm just like, I appreciate that. But honestly, I don't give a fuck if you listen to it or not. Like, we're just putting this out there. Like, we're building the empire. And you're over here like, all right, man, I'm going to check that brick when I get a chance. I'm like, fuck that brick. That brick doesn't matter. Watch this fucking house I'm going to build. It's going to take a while, but bitch, it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad to finally be in that headspace with it too, because, well, and just to I guess fill in any of our listeners on where we're at currently. So far we're just over a month. We're like a month and a week into having content released into the world. This is our 11th episode. And we're knocking on the door of 3,000 total downloads. We've got more than 22 hours of watch time logged on YouTube already. Mm-hmm. And that's like super fucking impressive, right?
Yeah.
And I am the type of person who's like, you didn't listen to the thing that I did? Why don't you love me? Like, I thought you were a friend. Like, you're my uncle. Why don't you listen to the thing? Why, you know, and some of that's tied to like daddy issues, I'm sure, right? But yeah. Like, I'm very, very thankful to be at the point to where I don't need that sort of validation anymore, mm-hmm. especially as it relates to this project. I'm like, no, like the proof is there. The people that have been on it really enjoyed it. And everyone that's listened to it and like gave us feedback has also really enjoyed it. Yeah. So like, I don't care if you listen.
Yeah.
It just, it's here. It's for you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want it, that's fine. Someone else I'm sure will take it.
Yeah. And really, like the vast majority of like our numbers are really going to come from the people that we interview and the people that follow them. Mm-hmm. So we just have to execute it good enough that we, you know, I don't want to say portray, but that we have these people on in an interesting and comfortable way, and we have mm-hmm. a good conversation with these people, and we facilitate that in every way that we can. And we do a good job there. So I don't take it personally. You know, it's just like if our numbers grow, I feel like I owe every bit of gratitude to every single one of our guests.
Yeah.
I mean, there are episodes like this, and quite honestly, I'm feeling really good about this conversation that we're having right now. You know, sure. It's just my personal editor's just like, fuck yeah, we stated that really nice. That was good. But still, you know, there's going to be an element of that for sure. But the point is I don't take credit for all of it. I don't take credit or take a responsibility, but I don't take it personally. I don't need my friends to listen to this. I don't care. Like, I'd rather them listen to my music. That I do take personally.
Yeah.
Like, that's something like, you won't listen to my, I'm going to die. I'm going to cry first and then I'm going to die.
That's your baby though. That's your art baby.
Yeah. That's my art baby. So I put a lot into it, but I mean, we put a lot into this, but it's the purpose is a little bit more loose than that. And sometimes it's not convenient that, you know, you don't have very personal feelings associated with it. Like, sure. Me, when I'm singing and stuff, that's when it's really tough, because that's such a close and personal thing.
That's you, like, at your most vulnerable.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like, I've got to get that perfect because I really don't want it to suck. I really don't want to be that guy that has songs out there with terrible singing and nobody tells them because they're all too nice. They're not like, dude, stop. Something you're good at this over here. Keep doing that. Keep doing Podcast Monkey.
Yeah, but also, who gives a shit how good the singing is?
Yeah.
because if you're singing from the right place, like within yourself, I feel like that translates to people's ear holes a hell of a lot better than
exactly.
like a beautiful, like well-trained vocal ability.
Exactly. But it's that right again, it's that arbitrary right. And yeah. like, I got to get it to that place. And so you're right. But once I get to that place, you're exactly correct that like, you no longer give a fuck what anybody mm-hmm. thinks, because you know that this is it. This is where it needs yeah. to be. It may not be, Justin Timberlake or Steve Cornell, you know, but, this is the perfect encapsulation of this. And that's how I feel about my song One More Time that mm. is about to release. We're currently mastering it right now, mixing and mastering it. But, I spent 10 years working on that song. I spent at least 4 or 5 of those years working on the lyrics to it, just how the words fit together, how the sounds of the words went, like repeating like rhythmic sounds the way like, cause I in rap music, there's usually like 2 different ways that they rhyme. They rhyme every like, you know, last word or something like that. But then they'll start like mixing it in. Like they'll rhyme the first word and then the last word and then something in the middle. It'll just have this kind of rhythmic quality to it. And that's something that I really liked. Notorious B.I.G. does that really well. Actually, he's something that, yeah, he does that really well.
Good flow, old Biggie Smalls.
Yeah. Old Biggie Smalls. But
back to rightness though, and yeah. like, okay, like yeah. with your vulnerability with singing, right? I definitely understand how a person needs to feel, like, especially in a situation like that where you're at your weakest emotionally when it comes to your art. Mm-hmm. You want to feel like you're giving the best possible representation of that. But
yes.
I think that there's a distinctive line, right? Because of course there is benefit to some level of what could be considered perfectionism.
Of course.
But that line, I think for the sake of mental wellness or just emotional well-being, that line probably should stop somewhere around just when you're confident enough to put your stuff into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily mean, you know, like, I don't mean that it's perfect. I don't mean that you have bloodied and beaten yourself into finally feeling comfortable with it. I mean, if someone had a gun to your head and made you like sing on a stage, are you going to be self-conscious about how you're singing in that moment? You know, I mean,
probably. And voice is one of those things too. When you're tense, it makes yeah. it worse. So you have to be nice and relaxed, just like, you know, what you were saying.
Anyway, I think I'm getting like muddied up into my own point here, but what I'm saying is working on those skills just to the point to where you feel like when you're talking about EQing, right? Mm-hmm. You go through all this oscillation of levels up and levels down because you know where bad is and you know that good exists within this range. And maybe you can like fine tweak that and like shorten that range over time. But the more you do that and the more you go through that process of just like knowing where bad is, the faster that process becomes over time and the more skill you essentially like train yourself into having. I don't know. I lost my point entirely, but it was a good one. It was definitely a good one.
Sometimes doing that too much gets you to the point where, like I mentioned earlier, you're not seeing it for what it is anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's still a very arbitrary place. The good and the bad is just, it's just what you make of it. I think one of the things Brandon told us from our last episode is, I don't know if he told this on or off the podcast, but he says he doesn't think about things like in good, you know? I forget how he expanded on that, but he recognized that good is just what I say is good, because what I say is good is not good to other people. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not an objective thing. And, you were starting to get into like the molecular stuff earlier. And I love that because there's, when you look at the objectivity of reality, there's no vantage point from where real reality can be seen. We're all contributing with our own reality tunnels and our own perspectives, which are going to vary slightly. And then, you know, at some point, scientists figured out that, like, hey, we can know what real reality is because we can measure it with our instruments, and that's cool, and that works a lot, and that helps a lot. But we've figured out that that's only relative to where you are in space-time, and that's been demonstrated by quantum mechanics and relativity. So then it's just like, fuck, then now the instruments are just kind of measuring it depending on, like, what we're doing and how we're observing it. And so there's no one place. There's no right answer. It's important for a person to understand that they are the ones who mark it. They are the ones that mark out the territory, that they're defining, that you're actively defining what is good and what is bad, because it seems like such an objective thing. It just seems like, oh, this is objectively good and this is objectively bad, but we can't fall in that trap. And when we fall in that trap, it's a very debilitating place to be. And it's hard to make that forward, get that forward momentum back, because you're stuck.
Yeah, recognizing that none of it's real definitely helps, though. You know, yeah.
None of it's real.
It's a lot easier to swim through existence when you know, it's just a weird hologram.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. You can do anything you want in this world, literally.
Yeah, yeah. To an extent.
to an extent.
There will be repercussions.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah. Yeah.
Experiment away. I hope that point comes back to you. Has it jarred it at all? Because you were really excited about that.
Do what?
You had a point and you lost it there?
Nah, it's okay.
It's gone.
It's lost to the gods.
I guess you're going to have to just fall back on our 47 other points we're making during this podcast.
Yeah, but they're all – I mean, there are lots of points and we've meandered a bit, but I still think that it relates to the same general idea or notion that – letting go is a powerful thing to do. Like letting go of expectation, letting go of what you truly don't have control over,
mm-hmm.
letting go of idyllic notions of what your thing should be. You know, that's really what it's all about. Letting go and applying action. Mm-hmm. Applying action for the purpose of building momentum, and understanding that the more momentum you build, the more refined your understanding of right will be.
Yes.
And the quicker you will be able to get to your own spectrum of perceived rightness.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Perfect. That was a great way of saying it. And at the same time, though, it's also not bad to have ideals and have
right.
an idea of what you want a thing to be, because you kind of need that North Star sometimes.
Yeah,
you
that's
need
your know. Intention. That's where yeah. your intention lies.
Exactly.
And you should have a very clear idea of at least the direction. Like, if nothing else, if you don't know what the thing looks like, you should at least know how you want it to make you feel.
Yeah, exactly.
That's don't even be say fun it. On the video.
It's on the video. Whenever we bang the mic, we just try not to say anything. And
yeah.
That's our perfectionism. That's
sign
my
up for our OnlyFans if you want to see us bang the mic.
Yeah, we're going to. You just had to. You just had to do it.
You did it.
This was clean the entire
time. I just walked in on it and pushed record on the camera.
So perfectionism.
Mm.
It can be a strength. Don't let it be your weakness. That's something that I tell to people all the time in jiu-jitsu, like bigger, stronger, athletic guys, they come in there and they don't have any experience with jiu-jitsu and they want to muscle everything. I tell them all the time, you're big, you're strong. That is good. That is an asset that most people that are doing this don't have. Don't let it become your weakness. Train like a little guy, you know, train like you don't have that strength. It's the same kind of concept. Perfectionism. Yeah. Don't – actually, it doesn't apply at all, but it's a similar kind of thing.
No. It absolutely does. And I love that you use that analogy, train like you're a little guy, because perfectionism to me is tied into – it's like a weird, like two-pronged fork where it's like ego and fear. that's what where perfectionism lies, is the intersection of ego and fear. That's a good way of
looking at it. I like that.
And if you're just to use the jiu-jitsu analogy, if you're a little guy and you don't have any experience, you have to come into that situation with the expectation that everyone else is going to crush you, like fucking destroy you. It's and that's true. A great place to be. That is that is the perfect place to be, because it's like the fulcrum of humility, right? It's like, yeah, I understand very clearly my place in the world because everyone around me is bigger and they all look at me like they want to chew me up, you know? Like,
yeah. Failure is a given in that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's understood at the outset, I'm going to get smashed. Whereas these big strong guys are like, nobody's going to fuck with me today. Like, you know, it's powerful knowing that you're going to fail. You can do more with that and you can learn more. And the little guys, they tend to have the most refined technique. The smaller guys that get really good at jiu-jitsu, they are pound for pound so much better than the larger people at their same level. It's kind of a weird thing. So I usually like to learn from like somewhat smaller guys. Sometimes there's some big guys that apply some good technique, but for the most part, you're going to find the really sharp stuff from the little guys that need it.
And one thing that so for me personally with jiu-jitsu, one thing that I feel has helped me out in terms of just understanding some of the general body mechanics, like using leverage and weight for and against me, is I had – okay, so I was competing at a tournament and was competing in one round against a blind guy. It was my first blue belt tournament, and this guy was blind. We started with hand grips already so we could feel each other from the outset. But feeling that and being in that moment, I kind of – withdrew within myself and tried to understand, because I could, you know, there were a lot of times where it almost seemed like he knew where I was going before I did. Mm. And I understood that he was using his just what senses he had. He was using that to feel me and not overthinking the situation. He was feeling the situation instead of thinking through the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a powerful moment for me, because I learned very, very distinctly that in order to do anything with this guy, I had to feel him just like he was feeling me. And it was such a noticeable thing that he was doing that I was shocked by it and was able to kind of slip right into that same sort of headspace. And very regularly now, if I'm like in a really difficult round with someone, closing my eyes puts me in a totally different space.
Nice.
And it's actually really, really fun, you know? But that's, I mean, you know, being that little guy surrounded by people that are going to crush you, or like trying to avoid that impeding perfectionism thing. It's almost like, let go of those preconceptions or expectations and just feel, right? Just feel the emotional or like spiritual impact of how that chord is like hitting your ears, or, you know, how that sunset looks, you know, in your painting, or, you know, following that like feeling, I think is a lot more powerful than just like thinking through the problem and essentially overcomplicating it.
That's definitely the bane of my existence right there, is overthinking everything.
Which is so funny too, because like you are such a deeply feeling and insightful person, you know, like you.
Well, thanks.
I mean, you're welcome, I guess. I don't know that it wasn't intended to be a compliment. Not that it's not a complimentary thing, but
I'm taking it as a compliment.
That's fine. That's fine. I was just a statement of fact, but, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
I was saying words.
Well,
they're gone.
Well, thanks. Thanks for that compliment. I'm taking as a compliment, but yeah, bane of my existence, overanalyzing everything, using my head to navigate in like a space that is intuitive by nature, you know, like most people don't look at a painting and they're like, it's their brain that likes it, you know? Most people will look at a painting and just like you said, like feel it, feel what the artist was intending, feel what the artist is making them feel, what the colors are saying, what whatever is going on. Same thing with music. Most people don't listen to a song and they're like, oh yeah, it's in this weird like meter and this and that and stuff like that. I mean, some people nerd out
about
that.
Nerd shit, yeah. Bro.
That's, there's nothing wrong
only
with that.
Only you
that's
and your cool. Music nerd friends do that.
Yeah, I mean, we do that a little bit, but you know. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, like when you're navigating a space, it's important to navigate it from the same like sensory apparatus that you want to convey to. I do graphic design and my designs would suck if I had my eyes closed, you know, like probably, if I'm not thinking from the perspective, like people are going to see this. So I need to look at it. And in the same way, people are going to feel this song. So I need to feel it. I need to feel where this is going, feel where the right is to me. And once I get that right, it's inconsequential what other people are thinking or feeling. Then it just is. It's just a new thing. It's the world plus this. And yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool place.
Yeah. But I think we covered a lot of good area in this. In this here podcast number 11, by the way, my favorite number is 11. It's on my wrist. I started experiencing a lot of synchronicities in my early adult life and not really having any guidance and kind of a wide open reality tunnel. I started taking it as signs from the universe to either do or don't do and something. And that got me in a lot of trouble. But I've since decided that instead of trying to determine what the objective reality of these bizarre synchronicities are, instead of like doing that and instead of discounting it as simply confirmation bias because it feels more significant than that, instead of doing that, I'm deciding what these synchronicities mean. So I still notice them all the time. Sure. And I decided that instead of, oh, what's the universe trying to say? I'm just like, I'm the fucking universe. What am I trying to say? And for me, I've used it as a reminder to be present, to stay in the moment, to take a breath, because I feel like that should be all of our like number one priority is to be in the moment because you don't have anything else. Nothing else really exists. So I actually got a tattooed on my wrist. So every time I see it, well, actually not every time I see, but the intention was every time I see it would be to remind me to kind of stay in the moment. So number 11 is good. The next 11 we're going to get is 111. So, that's only 99 episodes away, 901. Whatever. It's over 900.
Yeah.
No, it's not over 900. It's 111. Dude, my math is terrible. Wow. I totally processed that in a wrong way in my head. Like I can see when I see numbers on a page, I process them way better than when they're in my head. Back to the creative thing. If it's bouncing around in your head, it's just going to turn into shit.
I can't lie. I'd mostly just tuned you out at that point anyway.
You're like, yeah, okay. Yeah, whatever you say, whatever.
Yep. Uh-huh. I'm nodding.
Cool. So
we could definitely dig even deeper into this topic, but at a certain point, I feel like we'd probably, you know, be like stretching to pull stuff out of our ass.
Yeah.
But I feel very strongly that at some point in time in the future, maybe it's a year from now or however long, I think that this will probably be something that we have to revisit.
Oh, yeah.
Because chances are good we'll wind up discussing this very topic with many, many guests to come and chances are our own perspectives will be impacted by that as well as our own journey as a duo and as individuals. So chances are we'll have more to say on perfectionism, paralysis, manifestation, motivation, and that other one, momentum.
Momentum.
Yeah.
That's an important one.
Crucial. Arguably one of the most.
Yeah. Crucial. So we're going to go ahead and sign off. It's almost an hour in, and we're going to do a podcast with Mallory Hodgkin right after this, actually. So we're going to give ourselves like an hour break.
Yep. Stay tuned. Over the course of the next hour, if you want to go grab something to eat, if you want to hit the restroom, We're also in a parallel dimension, so our hour might seem like an approximate week or so. So, you know, just try and power through.
Just try and power through. Or if you're listening to this in the future, we'll be back in just a second. Just stay tuned. Just don't change that dial.
Okay, bye.
For now. Thanks, guys.